Welcome to Career Tools. This week, discussing your mental health with your boss, part one. This cast answers these questions. Should I talk about my mental health at work? How should I talk about my mental health at work? And how should I handle my mental health at work? As Mike would say, if you're interested in answers to these questions and more, stick around. Hey folks, we found another spot in the world where we can do an in-person public conference, and that's Silicon Valley on February 1st and February 2nd. On the 1st, we're holding an effective manager conference, and on the 2nd, we're holding an effective communication conference. We're actually adding conferences now because both our virtual and our public events are starting to fill up, so I encourage you, if you have any interest, to come and register on the website. It'll be Sarah presenting, and miracle of miracles, so travel between U.S. and Canada is becoming somewhat easier, and so we think that things are starting to get back to normal. So we hope to see you in Silicon Valley, February 1st and 2nd. Come to the website. Okay, Wendy, so I get to be a guest on the podcast I invented. I just feel so lucky. I did this for Manager Tools recently with Sarah, I think.
You got to be a guest on Sarah's podcast, right? That's how we put it.
Yes, this is the start of putting the old man out to pasture. It's funny. But if I'm not mistaken, this particular cast, I was the one that said to you, we have to do a cast about that.
Yeah.
And I think that, and in fact, I think that you were somewhat opposed to the idea. So it appears I do have some power.
That's right. It's one I've wanted to do for a long time, but I don't know. It's a difficult subject, like you said, and it takes a long time, you know? And this is my way of talking to my boss about my mental health. That everybody, yes. Not everybody needs to start a podcast.
Yes. I will say this, though. Part of the reason I was motivated to do this, and I know it took you several months to write this. We went through several versions until we got the tone just right, is that the conventional wisdom, which, of course, at Manager Tools, we always find idiotic, because wisdom, folks, is not conventional. Wisdom is not spread around. But the conventional wisdom about how to handle mental health at work is bizarrely wrong. The number of places you can go, to include Harvard Business Review, mm-hmm. where you could say, no, of course you would talk to your boss. Of course you would bring it up. And then they don't tell you exactly what to say. So you could go in and say, I'm having a mental breakdown. And if your boss has previously had a breakdown and she or he is familiar with that and they overreact to you suggesting that you have a treatable condition rather than just a bad day, you have created an enormous can of worms. And another thing is that people talk about their feelings. Well, if you have a boss who's over 40 years old, they probably don't want to hear about your feelings. That doesn't mean your feelings aren't important to you. But basically, the point I'm making here is the conventional wisdom is dead wrong, and there has to be a way to touch on this important subject without putting people in harm's way. And that's what the conventional wisdom does.
Agreed.
Yeah. And look, Wendy and I, all of the Manager Tools teams, we know that there's been a trend, societally speaking, about being more open about mental health and more accommodating about mental health needs. And that's a good thing. We like that. But the idea that that immediately translates into an open conduit of discussion between you and your boss is nightmarishly bad. You got to approach the issue carefully. And so in this guidance, Wendy is going to tell you how.
You can try.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all on you now, Wendy. I'll be taking a short coffee break.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Starbucks. When I get back, you can finish.
Yes. The general societal trend always makes me think of my grandparents who, my grandfather was fought in Italy and in Egypt and came back, and all of the people who came back with shell shock, which was a...
Okay, let's be clear. He didn't travel to Italy and Egypt.
He fought.
He fought in World War II.
Exactly.
First in Egypt and then later in Italy.
In Italy, yes.
Yes. You made it sound like he was a tourist. He went to Italy.
Only later. But you know, all the people that came back with shell shock, and that was a big societal trend, and then everyone didn't want to talk about it for a long time.
And most people don't want to talk about it. There are people who won't listen to this cast.
And for those people, it was really difficult. So the trend is good, but then that, on the other hand, that's like, you know, my grandmother saying, well, okay, you can go out to church without a hat on, but then it's all going to church with, you know, bikinis on. Like, there's too far to go, right?
Yes. Bikinis. Anyway. I've never seen that in church.
That's exactly, because it's inappropriate. So the outline for this is you are responsible for your own mental health and your mental conditions. Get a professional diagnosis. There are no secrets. There are rules about accommodations. And very carefully, when you've listened to the rest of it, we'll talk about speaking to your boss.
Okay, good. I like that. I like that structure. Good. So first one, you, all caps you, which we rarely use all caps, you are responsible for your own mental health and conditions. Wendy, I'm sorry to tell you, I think you're wrong. Maybe you're trying to trick me. I know that happens around here sometimes.
Yeah.
We can trick the guy. But no, I don't think that's right. Because, I mean, I hear people all the time say, you made me mad. I hear people say, well, it's the government. Well, you know, it's not me. It's the organization. No, it's my budget. So clearly this must be wrong.
That toxic workplace, right? It's the
Yeah, that's right. I'm fine. It's the toxic workplace. And my mental health is a direct result of that. I have no control of my mental health. It's a function of my environment. So this is obviously wrong.
Obviously. I hate to tell you this, but it's not. The only person who can have responsibility for your mental health if you are over 18 is you. Until you're 18, your parents do. But but it's the same as, if you think about it as physical health, you are responsible for your physical health. You choose what to put in your body. You choose what exercise you do.
Right.
You choose whether or not to go to the doctor.
Here's what's interesting about that. In fact, one of the revelations of the last quarter century, part of the reason we have the ability to have more reasonable and useful conversations about mental health is because mental health science massively improved because of the great advances in discovering that a great deal of mental health is a function of brain chemistry, which is physical. That's your body. It's not the soul or the mind separate from the body. And I heard somebody say the other day, psychiatrists have just become pill pushers. And I said, I got to tell you something, dude. You got to be cautious about that, because psychiatrists, good ones, are outstanding. And there are now drugs that can help people lead normal, productive, useful, ethical lives that they couldn't before. They're not as perfect as a life without those drugs, but they're a great deal better for the individual and for mankind and for their family and friends. And so when you say physical health the same way, yeah. And for so much of mental health, it is a physical health thing. The diagnosis and treatment with essentially groundbreaking, wonderful drugs are enormously powerful.
Yeah. I just read, as a quick aside, I just read a book called The Lobotomist's Wife. And it reads like a thriller, but it's very close to being based on truth. And it's fascinating. If you want to know about how mental health has developed, it's really good.
Yeah. But look, everybody talks about the health industry and so on. We don't have, at least in the United States, there's no such thing as a healthcare industry, or the healthcare system. There is an industry, but it's not a system. Modern healthcare wasn't born until like 1905, when science started to apply. In the mid 1850s to 1890s, people were still applying leeches and being bled. People were being bled. Oh no, this is long. This is science.
You know, that
yeah,
stuff.
Humors. Yeah, the vapors and the humors.
And reading phrenology and reading the
numbers. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, in the same way that what you choose to put in your body or choose to, how do you choose to move the body affects your physical health, then the same way you're responsible for what you choose to do and what you who you choose to listen to and what you choose to read and when you see a professional for your mental health. And we're not saying that it's your fault that you have a mental illness or that, you know, you're neurodivergent or that you struggle with certain circumstances. You know, neurodivergent being an umbrella term for things like autism and ADHD and dyslexia and others. Or we're saying that it's your fault your boss is abusive or your workplace is toxic. Like, none of those things are your fault.
Right. They're outside of you.
Yeah.
Or they may be inside of you, but they're a function of things that you can't control about the complexity of the human body.
Yeah. And we're saying that it's your responsibility to decide what you're going to do about those things.
Yes.
Which is easy.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else. You mentioned autism and ADHD and dyslexia and so on. By the way, I did not know neurodivergent. I realize now, I have a couple of books on mental health. I'd read it and had kind of ignored it because I didn't understand the connection between dyslexia and autism, ADHD, but now I understand it's really a basket of things mm-hmm. as opposed to a specific diagnosis. And one of the things that frankly bothers me is in the course of making our dialogues possible and bringing from behind the curtain the concept of the topic of mental health, there has been, in some cases, taking it a bit too far. Obviously, that's what we humans tend to do. And I'll give you a classic example. The number of people who tell me, well, I'm on the spectrum, mm-hmm. meaning the autism spectrum. And I find that often, and I say, really? Like, tell me about your diagnosis. Because, no offense, if you've broken a leg, I will ask you, tell me what the doctor's told you in terms of prognosis. If you say, I'm on the spectrum, tell me your diagnosis. Oh, I'm just saying that to give you an idea that I'm not a naturally social person. Well, no offense, since I'm a guy who calls it the way I see it, don't be a jerk. You can't tell people I have a broken leg just because you put a fake cast around your leg. And if you have not been diagnosed by a professional, by a psychiatrist or psychologist or whomever, you shouldn't go around saying that. And part of the reason people say that, and this happens actually quite frequently in Silicon Valley, it's probably happened to me 50 times, people have described themselves that way, or they describe someone else that way. And it is a term of respect, mm-hmm. as if the autism, it's like the old joke that if you go blind, your hearing gets better. Not actually physically true, but a useful idea that somehow autistic people are better at writing software code because they ignore people and so on. But we should be very careful about co-opting actual things. In my particular case, having served and having gotten shot at, the idea of trigger warnings, which now have been proven to be worse than no warning at all, I thought it was terrible that the reason it was called trigger warnings is because of the original use for oversimplification terms, shell shock, mm-hmm. because of loud noises and risk of death. And now it's, I need a trigger warning for a book I'm about to read, which I can assure you, those of my soldiers who struggled with post-traumatic stress disorder, even though they didn't call it that back in the mid-1980s when we had it, when my soldiers had it, they couldn't believe that young people were saying they had a trigger warning. They thought that was their way of talking to their psychiatrist. So if you are neurodivergent, that's good. If you think you are, you may not be, and you shouldn't say you are until such time as you have been diagnosed. And the beauty of mental health progress and mental health treatment in the last 30 or 40 years is we, in many cases, don't have to guess anymore. There is science behind it. There is medicine behind it. And you should be talking to a professional about that before talking to a colleague and self-diagnosing. It's one thing to say, I have a cold. Most people understand that, but mental health, different story. All right, I interrupted. Sorry.
That's okay. So we'll go back to responsibility. So your boss and your organization do not have a responsibility to make things better for you.
Oh, that's so good.
Which is not the same as they have a legal responsibility to make an accommodation for a disability. That's true, they do.
Okay, they do. So you're saying they do have that responsibility. Well, right. The law says they do. There's no argument there. But you're saying that someone who might have some struggles mental health-wise or is diagnosable, the person who would say, well, the organization has a legal responsibility to make accommodations for disabilities, so the logic is therefore inevitable that my organization has a responsibility to make things better for me. You're saying that logic does not follow.
It does not follow.
It not only doesn't follow, it's false.
It's exactly, yes.
Yes, okay.
There is a very strict definition of what a disability is and what those accommodations are and what a company yeah. has to do, and it's a legal definition. It's not what a lot of people would hope it was.
Which is make me feel better.
Yeah, exactly. For instance, if I'm having a bad week, which happens, I could say, Mark, I'm having a really bad mental health week. Don't give me any negative feedback. That's not an accommodation for my disability. That's yeah. making me feel better and potentially me not doing my job properly. That
right.
Those two, like, you don't have the responsibility just to make me feel better. And let me off the hook on doing my job. Yeah, because this company wouldn't work if that would happen. But, you know, the company doesn't have a responsibility to take away an essential part of your job just to make you feel better. You know, if you have anxiety about being out in public and you've got a sales job and all of a sudden, you know, going to offices stresses you out, they don't have to give you another job that takes that element away unless you have a diagnosis, you've had a discussion with a psychiatrist, you've had a discussion with HR. Like, it's a whole big thing. It's not, oh, you know, going to that building stresses me out, I'm not going to go anymore. They don't have a responsibility to make you feel better in that way.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but even if you go to a psychiatrist, even if you have a fear of going to, say, new office buildings, obviously this is a very unusual example, but following on your example, the law does not require the company to keep you in that job if you are fearful of it, if the best efforts have been made to reduce that through psychotherapy and drugs and so on, that no, you don't get to keep your job when in fact you have a mental illness, a mental health condition that keeps you from doing your job. And I think there are many people who believe that's the case. A good example was people, I can't remember where it was, I want to say it was Chicago. A friend of mine who worked at a company said, we had four or five people quit because the company would not create safe spaces. And I said to them, I said, well, good riddance. For two reasons. One, if I want a bigger office and my company won't build it for me, and that's a problem for me, I should go somewhere else where I can get a bigger office. I mean, these people may in fact have been very competent, but they're essentially asking for the sun to revolve around the earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not the way the organizations work. So keep going.
Yeah, they don't have to provide healthy food in the cafeteria so you eat well.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to help you look after your physical health. So there's no, they don't need to make you take your breaks. They need to provide you them and allow you to take breaks.
But can I go back to the food thing real quick?
Sure.
A number of years ago, this is 20, 25 years. Nah, maybe slightly less. Yeah, no, 25 years ago. Silicon Valley client said, we're going to have food. You know, this was the beginning of perks in Silicon Valley, which ended with pets, mm-hmm. by the way. And then somebody brought a snake and then it ate somebody else's mouse. And that was not good. I thought it was hilariously funny. And they said, we're going to have a cafeteria. And they were very clear. Look, we want you to not have to go, to not have to spend your money. We can spend less money on this food than you would spend in the aggregate. And it's a perk. It's a mm-hmm. it's a recruiting and a retention perk. And then the story got out that actually they were only going to serve healthy food. Well, look, if you work for us, we're not going to give you a lot of sugar and salt and have you going back and forth to the bathroom or having emotional highs and lows. And so people started bringing in food and the company then said, no, you can't bring in any food. And it was just this whole thing of, it turned into a mess because the company was trying to do something that clearly benefited itself and also benefited the employees. But people are going to do what people want to do. And I'm pretty sure I could be wrong, but I think a healthy bit of, pardon the pun, but a healthy bit of mental health counseling and psychiatry and psychology is about physical health and eating right. You have to maintain all the stuff that allows you to have a normal brain chemistry. Yeah, so that one about healthy food, yeah. And there are people, if you provide them healthy food, they then complain that they want unhealthy food. And I think I just tweeted something the last week. I think you may remember something to the effect of, I made a point about everything is context. And there was a comment about some prisoners or something. Once they discovered they were not going to be executed, they complained bitterly about the tea. You know,
it's all relative.
The idea that you're complaining about whether it's cabbage or lettuce, which I heard a conversation to that effect. Oh, this is cabbage. I don't eat cabbage. I only eat lettuce. I can't have a salad here today. I thought to myself, man, that's a first world problem you got there.
True that. Yeah. True that.
Just a special note here about this cast, about discussing mental health. I had soldiers who worked for me who struggled with mental health issues. I've managed two people outside of the Army in my career that had mental health issues. And I will tell you, it's deadly serious business. And if you're like me and you were raised with the idea that mental health is a weakness, I can assure you, you're wrong. And it's incredible what chemistry and medicine and science have done to help us and help those who are suffering. I know how hard careers can be, and I also know that we are here to help you. If you're struggling in your career, I encourage you to consider becoming a licensee and getting access to all of our materials in written form. We know that not only does mental illness make handling stress harder, but when you struggle with stress, that makes you feel more sick, and we don't want that. And if you ever need a single show note and you just feel that you really need one and you can't afford it for some reason, send me an email and I'll make sure you get it and I won't charge you for it. I hope you enjoy the rest of this cast.
So we'll talk about what the organization does have, an ethical duty. It has an ethical duty not to allow your mental health to be damaged. In other words, that there is some duty that if you work in reception, that people don't walk off the street and start yelling at you. That would probably damage your mental health. And the company has some responsibility to prevent that from happening. Your work and the people you work with shouldn't be actively damaging your mental health.
Yes, good. Yeah.
But the company doesn't have a reverse duty to actively improve your mental health.
That's very good.
It's kind of the status quo.
I love that second part, which people always leave out in the discussion. But in the first part, you know, ethical duty not to allow your mental health to be damaged. Now, you must understand, dear listeners, that that does not mean you get to define what is your damaged mental health. No, there are rules and guidelines about this. You saying, I feel bad, is not therefore an ethical violation of its obligations by your organization. You have to understand there's a difference.
Even the legal mandates like the Americans with Disabilities Act doesn't ask employers to do more than make accommodations in areas in which an employee is struggling. So, for example, if receiving unexpected performance feedback, you know, your boss walking up to your desk and saying, right, can I give you some feedback? If that exacerbates a diagnosed anxiety disorder, then the company could require the manager to give you notice. But they don't have to prevent him giving you any performance feedback at all. You know, they can make it a little easier for you. They don't need to take it away entirely.
And I like that phrase, but they don't have to prevent him giving you any performance feedback at all. Because in fact, there have been a couple of court cases about that where the employee lost, saying, you know, I can't deal with performance communications. And the court found that the organization had an obligation to all of its employees to do that. And again, it goes back to this issue of how people feel. I feel this way, so therefore my mental health has been damaged. That was stressful, that I've been damaged, and so therefore the company is at fault. And simply not so. Although this ought to make you take pause, managers, if you're listening, remember, to your employees, you are, to your directs, you are the company. Whatever you do to your employee, the company is doing to one of its employees.
So we'll just talk about accommodations and what that really means. So
an
accommodation is the legal term for what a company needs to do if you have a disability. And it's a modification or adjustment to the job, the work environment, or the way things are usually done during a hiring process. These modifications enable an individual with a disability to have equal opportunity to get the job and successfully perform their job to the same extent as people without disabilities.
That was helpful.
Accommodations are about making everybody equal. They're not about making some people better than others, or at least more able to do a job. They're about giving everybody the ability to do the job. And you have an obligation to engage in reasonable, rational behavior. And if you're suffering from poor or deteriorating mental health, it's up to you to make the choices to put yourself in a better place. And I know from bitter experience that it's difficult to do that when you're ill.
When you're feeling not only depressed or down or sad. For many people, they don't understand that sadness for someone with a mental health issue can be the absence of virtually all hope.
Exactly.
Literally a feeling of, not only a feeling of thinking I can't do it, but believing your arms are made of lead and you cannot lift them up.
Yes. And the very act of breathing being an effort.
Effort, yes.
Yeah. And I will also tell you from bitter experience that a therapist will not tell you to go in and tell your boss to make your job easier. They will help you work out what's going on. They'll help you find coping strategies, and they'll help you decide whether or not you want to stay in that environment. They don't say, hey, your environment needs to change. They help you make the decision for yourself, but they don't ever say, oh, we can change that job. We can change that boss.
And let me tell you something else. This is one of the key things that I have seen in 30 years of managing and watching managers and talking to individual contributors and managers and executives. This is a key divide. You ask someone who is complaining about their mental health or hinting at it, or I feel this way, or I'm sad, or that made me uncomfortable. Discomfort is a thing that I've noticed is more common these days. And you can ask them the question, have you talked to somebody about this, a professional? And they say no. And here's what I've learned. Now, this is not black and white, but in the vast majority of cases, if you go to a professional, they will do what Wendy says. They will not try to fix your environment. They will try to help you fix yourself. Guess what your family and friends will say? What needs to change about your environment? And I've discovered that the people who are least likely to have talked to a professional are the ones who then end up talking to their family, and they're the ones that come back and say, well, here are the things you need to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can tell you, we'll do a Manager Tools cast about this as a companion to this at some point. And in that cast, we will say that it would be completely appropriate after someone says, I want this accommodation, say, I'm sorry, we won't do that. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who, in the spur of the moment, in the heat of the moment, will say, I expect you to do this or I'm gone. Mm-hmm. And if, in fact, you are subject to something like that, because people are appropriate to say, I'm well aware of what we can and can't do, and we will not do that. And so, therefore, I assume I now have your resignation. Because you just told me that if you don't do X, I'm going to quit. And I will miss you. And I'm not going to put you in the difficult, unethical, embarrassing situation of having promised to do something. If something else was true, that thing turns out true, and then you don't do it because now I can't trust you anymore. Those kinds of ultimatums I have always found to be stupid and ugly, but enlightening. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it.
Yeah. Yes, it's interesting that the people that are least likely to be qualified to giving you advice give you the wrong advice. Funny that, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yes. Okay, folks, that's the end of part one. Touchy, delicate subject with a lot of confusing guidance out on the web, not given by professionals, worthy of sticking around for part two. Come back next week. We'll see you then.